interest.
Hey guys, Dave here. Want to let you know that we're about to drop part two of the Alabama Football Podcast. Hope you enjoyed part one, and certainly hope you enjoy part two as well. Don't hesitate to reach out to us on iTunes, Facebook, email, the website, and leave us your comments and any feedback you may have. And as always, thanks for listening in to the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young people are playing against them. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Linebacker was a position that we wanted to track during spring drills as well, and there were really, you know, three moving parts there. You know, Hightower coming back, C.J. Mosley and his development, and then Upshaw, but not really Upshaw. It's the other side who lines up opposite the other side of is who's Upshaw's bookend was really the topic that we were wanting to track. So, you know, why don't you jump into one of those or any of those which catches your fancy?
Well, you know, Dante Hightower, you played a hell of a ball game today. I gave you a ton of shit last year, and you came back from a very severe knee injury, and you looked like you had lost a step to me, and you just weren't flying to the ball like you had flown to the ball before that Arkansas game. And that just wasn't fair, because the injury that you sustained, it just took a longer amount of time for you to feel comfortable that you were back to 100%, that you get rid of the knee braces, etc. You played today the way you played 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I would, last year I wanted to see Darius on one edge, Upshaw on the other, and Dante Hightower, you pick it in the middle. Well, Dante Hightower filled in on the Darius side today, and he brought the pressure on the other edge from Upshaw. Now we just got to find somebody in the middle. But to use your, you know, not to steal your thunder with Fluker, but he made some plays. Hightower made some plays today.
Yeah. Oh, he bowled over. I mean, he put Lyman on skates and he bull rushed Fluker
a couple times.
One time, Fluker went in to help Steen when he didn't really need to, and then he came back out and he was off balance, and Hightower put him down. But another time, it was mano a mano, and Hightower put him on his ass.
It was the last play of the half.
He just knocked him flat out, and then, as you know, I guess it was early then in the third quarter, where he comes on a blitz and a lineman doesn't pick him up, and Demetrius Gould, you know, gets handed his lunch too, and we kind of laughed at the time. You know, Hightower said, you know, in his mind, he's thinking, man, I put Fluker on his ass, Demetrius, what you got? And he just looked really, really good. And it speaks to, you know, the knee injuries, and it's just sort of the rule of thumb that I've heard is, you know, physically, you can come back in a year, but it's that whole next year where you get the mental edge back. And, you know, it was this spring that he took off, you know, some of the additional extra knee braces and really started playing and really looked, you know, nimble. We saw him even just moving.
He was shuffling pre-snap
some of his reads and some of his moves. He just seemed so fluid. And I think that, you know, if he's fully healthy and an Upshaw is fully healthy, those become players that we had last year. But we didn't have them at their max, at their full value, if you will. Boy, if we have them back, all the way back, that's going to be something else.
Well, it is, and you know, Darius was banged up. Hightower was obviously coming back, as we mentioned, and Upshaw got hurt with that high ankle sprain, which takes forever to heal. And so we really didn't have anybody, any of those pieces last year, that was healthy.
Right.
And we didn't see those guys healthy until the bowl game last year. Well, Upshaw picked up where he left off, and Hightower has even accelerated further just than after we saw him in the Michigan State game.
He was just incredibly impressive today, and that was one of the takeaways, you know, from certainly a positive side that I have today.
What'd you think about Jarrell Harris starting for the first string defense?
Well, that was a surprise. I was very surprised to see that. You know, I was talking with someone not too long ago, and we were talking about Jarrell, and you know, oh, he looked good at spots last year. Well, he looked the best last year when we played Georgia State, which is, you know, not even a high school all-star game, because the high school all-stars, you know, go to, you know, D1, you know, name brand D1 programs. And so he had his best game against, you know, Georgia State on their first year of existence. And so that kind of speaks to, you know, maybe what he brings to the table in terms of, you know, simplified game plan, you know, go attack, and that's all you have to do. The fact that he was with the starting defense today, I was really surprised. I was really surprised. I certainly had him pegged as, you know, as South Alabama's, you know, starting linebacker this year. This being his senior year, he started with this crew. If nothing else, maybe that's a nod from Coach Saban that I want you on the roster, and we're going to try to find a way to rotate you in. If I had to list out, you know, who's the starting linebackers next year, I don't see him as a starter when it comes to live rounds.
You know, I think he will be, though, because it was very interesting the linebacking spot that he was in today. Because last year, he was the starter for the first two games of the season at inside linebacker next to Dante Hightower. And he was flying to the ball, and he was in there next to Dante before C.J. Mosley blew up and did what C.J. Mosley did. Well, now that you've got C.J. Mosley, now you've got Nico Johnson, who you're very comfortable with inside. And Coach Saban is so good about finding roles, right? Finding pieces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've talked about, you know, he's got, you know, it's ingenious, but you've talked about the fact that he's got 22 starters on defense and 22 starters on offense. And what does it mean to be a starter? Well, it's really not the top 11, right? It's all situational, right? I mean, look at Daquan Menzie. He could be a starting cornerback. Not to skip to DBs for a second, but my point real quick is that C.J. Mosley is manning the nickel and dime situation, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Jarrell Harris is in there in the base defense, in the base 3-4. How much of the time do we run a nickel formation? A lot.
Pretty much
most of the game. And so which linebacker is going to come off the field whenever we bring in Daquan Menzie? It's going to be the outside linebacker position that Jarrell Harris is manning.
Right. And, you know, and that's fair. You know, and you're right, you know, from how we name our starters, and I think that's something that Saban, you know, really gets frustrated with, because to ask the question
the way, look at it that way.
Yeah, to ask the question the way that people ask the question, who's your top 11, is to not understand how he approaches the game. No, we have formations. We have a number of formations. We have a number of variations on offense and defense to, you know, to stop different systems and to give different looks. And so if you're on the field when, you know, if you're first man on the field when we run one of those formations, even if it's a very hybrid, unique formation, then you're a starter. And so we do have, you know, we do end up with more than 11 starters, which I think is fascinating. I still don't know if I consider Jarrell a starter, but you do.
Do you think he was out there because of the injury to Watkins then?
Could
Watkins have been that guy if he wouldn't have gotten hurt?
Well, I don't know if that doesn't scare me more.
I mean, was it Watkins running with the ones at the beginning of spring?
I think that
wasn't that the story when he got hurt?
Yeah, the story was he was performing very, very well, and you know, I discounted that. I didn't give a whole lot of stock. You know, we always, you know, you always hear reports about, you know, somebody's doing well, da 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 da. And so that's one that I wasn't putting a lot of investment in.
We'll both be surprised if he's still the starter come mid August.
Oh yeah, if we get into
we hope that he is though.
You know, the depth chart comes out, and I don't,
we need him to be. We need him to be. I mean, we hope that he is. I mean, he's a senior. He's got the frame for it. You know, we've always questioned his ability to be in the right place in the formations, but we need him to be. We hope that mid-August he's out there.
If he's prepared, you know, if he's ready and Saban is signing off on him being the starter, then I will be surprised. I won't be mad. I'll be surprised. And as we sit here today, it's not what I expect to happen. But if it does, then, you know, hey, roll Tide. What do you think about C.J. Mosley's development?
C.J. Mosley was playing. I am surprised that Nico Johnson is manning the inside linebacking spot with Dante in those base formations. Now, because we seem to pass the ball a hell of a lot today and really was not in a traditional running formation very much, Nico wasn't on the field a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we were sitting there combating that with a nickel formation, C.J. Mosley played, it seemed like, 8 snaps to every 2 that Nico played. So, CJ is our best cover linebacker. CJ's speed and his burst to the ball. I mean, he was covering backs out of the backfield step for step. I mean, this guy continues to develop, and his best days are still ahead of him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He looked very, very, very good today. I mean, he's a very athletic linebacker, and then you're right, he was definitely covering receivers down the field, or, you know, on the wheel route a couple of times. He was just in the hip pocket of the running back, and, you know, I made the comment as we were watching the game that, you know, you have a linebacker like that on the field, he can just take that component away from an offense. He just takes it away. It's just, you know, you're not going to get a lot of action, passing to your running back when you have a C.J. Mosley out there, and that's his primary responsibility. And I'll even point to the play where, you know, we threw the ball, McCarron threw the ball to Trent and scored a touchdown. That was phenomenal pitch and catch by those two players.
It's the only reason
because,
it happened.
You know, you can go back and look at the replay, and it's just barely that Mosley's missing that ball. He was not out of position. He did not misplay it. It was a perfectly placed ball. McCarron led the receiver, and Trent, you know, has good hands and was able to, you know, fingertip the ball.
Trent.
And well, that's what I'm saying.
So it was, Trent made a move on him. How many other backs are going to make a move on him to even have that separation?
Right. And so that's what I'm saying. Even, you know, it's almost the exception that proves the rule. It took two phenomenal efforts to complete a pass, and then, you know, all the receivers running go routes, and, you know, and then so that led to a touchdown. But my point is, that's the exception that proves the rule. C.J. Mosley is going to take away a lot of passes to, or at least limit the yards to a lot of running backs out of the backfield. And he's going to be an exciting player to watch. Who lines up opposite of Upshaw?
In the base formation?
You're going to go.
If we're gonna spend the majority of the game with in the nickel formation, then Daquan Menzies is gonna come in and C.J. Mosley's gonna come in and Nico Johnson's gonna run off the field. And if we're in that formation, your three linebackers are gonna be Courtney Upshaw. Well, I guess in that formation it's gonna be Courtney Upshaw and C.J. Mosley, and they're gonna be the only two linebackers on the field. And Courtney Upshaw is going to have his hand down on the line of scrimmage. And so we're going to spend a lot of the time where your only linebacker on the field is going to be C.J. Mosley. And so I go back to, if it's in the base formation, you would hope Adrell Harris can beat out Alex Watkins, for Pete's sakes.
Well, I think there's
Nico's not going to move out there.
No, Nico's not going to move out there. I would, going into today, I thought that Ed Stinson had an opportunity for that, but actually seeing him play, I think he's beefed up more than I really expected him to, and so I think he's more of a true defensive end. You know, I think there's a chance that, and it all depends on the middle linebacking spot. Who can fill that? And we've got, you know, Dante there now, and if someone else can fill that spot, then and that may free up Dante to play opposite of Upshaw, and then that starts to be pretty exciting. If those guys are booking in there at the linebacker position, and you know, and Hightower's back and healthy and
yeah, but he's making the calls though. Who's comfortable making the calls? Because I think he's just now comfortable making the calls.
I don't know.
Maybe that just shows you what a quarterback Rolando was, because it's taken him 2 years to have the comfort level to make calls like Rolando did.
That's a fair component. I'm just thinking if there's someone, it's all about shifting people to get your best players on. And so if we can get someone that can play better than the guy playing, you know, on the outside opposite, and so we can move Hightower, then we're going to go. It's a shell game, really. And I'm sort of staging, you know, this to talk about Trader Priest a little bit. He looked really good. And to think that literally he's weeks out of high school, and going through his first spring drills, he looked very, very good today. And he's a guy, you know, maybe not this season, maybe he gets reps, but I think he spends some time in the middle, and maybe that gives Hightower an opportunity to sort of freelance on the outside.
I think he definitely will not be redshirted. He looked very comfortable out there, like you said. You know, here's a guy who graduated from high school in 3.5 years and, you know, came to campus in January, so he's been on campus now for a couple months. And he kind of reminded me of a D'Amico Ryans in the standpoint of just a student of the game, knows where to be, must be a very bright kid because it's a very complex defense. I mean, come on. He wasn't yelled at all today about being in the wrong position, and he's only had the playbook for a couple months. Right. We got guys on our team still getting yelled at by Saban, and they've had the playbook for 4 years.
Yep.
So that he performed very well today.
Yeah, he did, and I think he's got tremendous upside, and so he'll be a player that'll be fun to watch grow and develop, and I think he's certainly going to contribute this fall and in seasons moving forward as well.
What'd you think about the quarterback comparison today?
I was going to flip to the quarterback comparison.
How would you break down the? Would you say either one of them have separated themselves, or what's your take on, you know, how Saban's going to look at that?
Well, I would say that neither really has definitively separated themselves. I think they both made very good plays during the game today, and they both, you know, had some suspect plays. I think that I think their performance on the field and sort of, you know, their stat line or their overall review today, I think there was a little bit of manufacture to that. It's harder to manufacture that in an A-Day setting than it is in some of the other scrimmages.
Sounds like a conspiracy theory.
I'm not going to go as far as to call it a conspiracy theory, but I'll tell you the objective. The objective is this. The objective is to keep both players on the team in the fall. And so you have a high-profile star position, the quarterback. We see
two highly touted high school quarterbacks.
Right, and they're both young. One's a redshirt sophomore, and the other's a redshirt freshman. It's not like a junior and a freshman or a senior and a sophomore. There's very little separation. And so you have a situation, and we see this at a lot of other schools, where you name a starter and the other guy leaves because he wants to play. He didn't want to wait 3 years for his opportunity. And if you name Sims as the starter, then that could conceivably mean that McCarron never gets to start. And so there's an opportunity that he would then immediately want to transfer it, you know.
While I still have time to play.
Let me start call schools on Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
So I can play. And so I think the objective is to keep both players on campus. And then if you realize that, you know, that's the objective, then it's very easy to start to look at things that happen. You know, we talked about, we were breathless talking about, why are we not getting more reps to McCarron last season? Why are we not rotating him in? Well, you rotate him in, then he has an advantage over Sims. And so maybe we didn't play him last year, already looking forward to keeping both of those quarterbacks on the team for this season. Because if McCarron has that sort of undue advantage because he had all the game experience last year, then everyone's going to assume he's the starter. And it's real easy for Philip to say, I don't have a real competitive shot at this because he's so far ahead of me. You put both guys on both teams so they both get to compete with the first team offense and against the first team defense. I think that's pretty compelling. They each get time with the second string as well. I think that's pretty compelling. They both have that sort of mixed opportunity, and so you're not given favor, apparent favor, one to the other. I think we strategically today, in the other scrimmages, we do situational stuff, so it's easy to kind of manufacture numbers that are going to look similar. But today, we seem to strategically rotate Blake Sims in at quarterback, and so there was a stretch there where McCarron had performed so much better than
he was ahead.
Phil, he was sort of ahead, if you will. And now we're going to rotate Blake Sims in, and we're going to rotate Philip Ellie in. And so, it's been a while since we've seen McCarron while Phil's getting he's catching up, catching up. And then he took advantage of that and played well. And so this is going to be very annoying to me, because it's clear as day, Stevie Wonder can see this. We will not name a starter until the week of the Kent State game. And we may not name that starter until the day of the game. Saban may just say, he just may stick it to the media and say, well, when we go out on the field, you'll see who the starter is. And it's going to be annoying because it's going to be breathlessly reported, and people are just going to go, bend themselves in knots trying to figure it out. And it's not going to be known before the week of the game. And I give even odds that we don't know until that Saturday.
Well, in looking at their I agree with that. I think if you're correct in him wanting to keep both players on the team, well, then he's definitely not going to be in a hurry to name that starter, even if he knows who that starter is. I will say that I think both of them seem to manage the game pretty well, considering they were both under duress most of the game. The pocket was collapsed numerous times. They seemed to step up in the pocket. They seemed to feel their way. They both could sense the pressure coming from behind them. They had eyes in the back of their head. I will say McCarron seemed to have a little better touch on the ball. You know, he had the pass to Brandon Gibson and the nice pass to Trent. He seemed to definitely have better touch on the ball, whereas Sims has a little stronger of an arm. But they were both hitting some. They were both scrambling and finding receivers in traffic that McElroy could not have done. And so they were both making plays with their arm that we did not see last year. And so I think they both have enough mobility that they can run for a first down. They actually both ran for a first down in the game.
They both did.
And saw an opportunity and took it. And so from a Bama's fans' perspective, from what I saw today, I think we could win with either one of them.
I think we could too. I think McCarron, they both showed some footwork and some pocket awareness. I think McCarron, to your point, had a really nice touch on his ball. I'm not saying that Phil doesn't have that, but I didn't see it today. Again, we haven't seen all the practices and all the scrimmages, but didn't see it today. But he's got a rifle, and he rifled the ball in there a couple of times amongst collapsing coverage, and it was very, very impressive. And then, you know, a la Brett Favre, he rifled it, you know, attempted to rifle it in there a couple times, and it certainly led to at least one pick. Jerick Williams had a nice interception of a ball that he was just trying to rifle it in there and depend on his arm. And so I think, you know, discretion's a better part of valor there. And so that's something that he can learn and develop on. But I think either could start, and I would feel comfortable with. I wouldn't be surprised, and I've said this before, and now that I've actually, you know, under live game conditions, I've seen both of them. They will both play this next season, and I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere along the way, if they both don't pick up a start this next season. Any other observations or you know, sort of conclusions that you draw from May Day?
No, I guess a couple quick things to from some other takeaways is the special teams disappointed me. The punting was pretty abysmal. There were some bad shanks on the punts. Cade Foster had the opportunity at the end of the game in a game simulation, had a chance to kick a 43-yarder and then a 47-yarder, either one that would have put up the Crimson team by a touchdown. They were up by four. You know, this is a great game situation from a coach's standpoint of, you know, let's put us up by a touchdown. Well, he missed the 43-yarder, you know, by a little bit. He missed the 47-yarder by a lot.
Yeah.
And so that was a little frustrating.
And that's a critical thing too, right? Because one of the mantras, of a coach is, you know, from an offensive standpoint, how do I get, sort of offensive minded with the lead? How do I get a better than 7-point margin? And, you know, so you have to score a touchdown on me. How do I get to seven? And then, you know, from a playing from behind mode, how do I get to seven? Because, you know, you can trip and fall down sometimes and score a touchdown. And so how do I get better than, how do I get seven or better? Or how do I get to within seven? And so to have two opportunities to go out there and to make it seven, it's kind of a magical number, to make it seven, and he couldn't do it. And that's a big deal. Like you said, the punting was bad. I wasn't pleased, I don't think, with any of the special teams. And I know they weren't playing returns, and so I don't even count that. But the kicks, they were live kicks. They were bad. And then you noticed and called out, and then we started tracking it that McCarron was taking the snaps, or not the snaps, but he was the holding. And in almost every situation, I saw Hardy Buck hold once when we started watching it, but I think McCarron took, you know, 80-90% of the holds, and that's surprising because, you know, you think that if he's your number two quarterback, then okay. But if he's your number one, you don't want him out there in that position. You want someone else. And so.
So in case he becomes your number one, they should be grooming
and develop someone else. Yeah. And so if it's going to be a Hardy Buck, then that's awesome.
Let him take them all.
Why don't we just do them all? And yeah. He could just be the designated holder for every kick. And so he gets as many possible reps. And so I don't understand why, you know, that happened that way. I guess in terms of something else I didn't understand is, why the hell is Trent still returning kicks? Last year he was kind of going to be, you know, I won't say backup, but sharing starting time with Mark Ingram, and now he's clearly, you know, by a margin going to be your starter at tailback. So I don't like him. I like him even less doing that. And then I guess the final observation is, damn, we had all the starters in up until the last play of the game. Have we ever seen that in an A-Day?
I do not remember from all the games we've gone to in person and the ones we've watched on TV. I have never never do I recall seeing the ones going against the ones at the end of the football game with the, you know, with the game on the line. And, you know, typically the fourth quarter is a time where you start seeing players, you know, whose names are Ranzel Watkins, and you're like, who the hell is Ranzel Watkins?
Tommy, we've been to 8A games where they start bringing out players. We think they're going to come in the stands and get us next because, we follow the program. We know the players, and I don't know who these players are. And we live this and breathe this and absorb every bit of it that we can. And there's players out there that we don't know who they are, and it's mind-boggling sometimes. Boy, that was not the case today. And
why? And why is that?
And to see some of the coverage late in the game, that the stands were nearly empty. When, and I know it's 8A, and so the winner or the loser doesn't so much matter, but you're out there to see the players compete for
starting
meaningful
jobs.
You know, opportunities in the fall, starting jobs, quarterbacks even, and people were vacating the premises. It was embarrassed for the people that, what do they get their 8A button and leave? And I don't understand.
I do not either. And I'm just curious what Saban was. Because obviously he said in his interview at the beginning of the game, the biggest thing in this game is see how they play on this stage, etc., and get out of here without any injuries.
Yeah.
And so if you're trying to get out of here without any injuries and you're playing your ones and your, you know, Trent Richardson's being tackled by Courtney Upshaw with 30 seconds left in the scrimmage game, what is he after there? Because, you know, last year's team was void of leadership. It was void of the leadership. He talked about this in the halftime of the Auburn-Oregon National Championship game and what his team did not have that those teams on the field had to get them to that national championship game. And one of the biggest things was leadership. Mm-hmm. And, you know, was he trying to develop their mental toughness by having them be out there the whole game? Was he trying to see who was going to step up and be a leader on the defense and a leader on the offense by having all those guys out there the whole game?
I think it had to be that. I mean, you know, he's basically saying, I'm not going to train you to play a half of a football game, or I'm not going to train you to play, you know, a three-quarter ball game, because guess what? Last time we lined up on this same very field, we did. And so this
last time,
time
we played on this field, yeah, was the damn Auburn game.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we did not play a full game the last time we lined up on this field. And so today, I don't care that it's A Day, we're playing a full game.
You're not going to be sitting over there in the fourth quarter muckety muck with the fans, yep, and laughing it up and talking shit. You're going to be in the game.
Yep. That's about the only thing that I can think of. And so I'm glad we came out of it injury free. There's still even part of me that says, you know, okay, I get that you want to keep your ones in, and you want to keep your starters in, but some starters, you know, Trent Richardson are uber starters, and so maybe you make a couple exceptions around the edges, and boy, we didn't. You know, he was, like you said, Courtney Upshaw's tackling, you know, Trent Richardson, and boy, those are going to be two studs on next year's team, and I wouldn't have mind. At that point, I would not have minded not seeing them.
I guess one other quick thing to mention, we hadn't talked much about the DBs. And man, what to say about that? Because, you know, you and I feel like we have five guys, you know, that could be starters and, you know, could be starters at cornerback. And, we threw the ball a ton in this ball game. We didn't run the ball hardly at all. And was it that they got so much pressure on the quarterbacks that the secondary didn't have to cover as long, or was the secondary just that damn good? You know, you talked about that one play you noticed where these guys were all just blanketed. And I'm just sitting here wondering, you know, we didn't see any flashes, but it's almost like, you know, they also didn't give up any big plays.
I think our secondary is going to be incredibly strong. And there were years, you know, there have been seasons not that long ago that we would be excited and not, you know, for bad reason, that we would be excited to have Phalon Jones and John Fulton as our starting cornerbacks. And I'm not mad at those guys because they're high quality players, but they're also the fourth and fifth cornerback
on our team.
On our current team. And hey, Fulton and Phelan are really high quality, high caliber players. Phelan, you know, started some at LSU as a freshman, you know, before he transferred. But, you know, the reality is they're the four and five cornerbacks behind some guys that are really duking it out. And you take a Milliner and a Kirkpatrick who started at corner last year, and a Menzie who played some, you know, in nickel situation. Well, remember Menzie this time last year, you know, tore his Achilles, and it was sort of a miracle that he was on the field in the fall. Well, he's a year removed from that injury now, and come the fall, he's going to be a better player.
Because that was the spring he had the injury. Yeah, a year ago, right now.
Okay. Yeah, and so, you know, come this season, he's going to be, you know, almost a year and a half away from that injury, and he's going to be back to sort of his original state mentally as well as physically. He's not going to be as limited in the number of reps that he can take. And so he will very well compete for a starter job. And so it's not that just we have five, but they're getting better amongst themselves.
Well,
I mean, John Fulton was a freshman last year, and so he's going to be a sophomore. He's getting significantly better. And Phelan, more time in the system. It's not just that we have so many, but they're all just getting so much damn better. It's going to be amazing. And even some of the safeties look good. Jerick Williams looked really good today. And Nick Perry, I mean, they were in the black non-contact jerseys, but they looked really good today. And you know, when we know what we have in Lester and Barron.
They knew where they were always in the right position, too, though, it seemed like. From our vantage point, granted it was TV, you know, the Nick Perry and the Jerick Williams seemed like they were in the right position where they needed to be in a certain situation.
They were, and you could just, you know, reading body language, you could just tell they're frustrated because they were in the black jerseys. They you know, they weren't supposed to. They were just kind of bump or touch and to tackle. And they were in such a position that they would have clobbered a couple of running backs, or they would have clobbered a couple of receivers. And
just had to back away.
Yeah, it had to back away. And sometimes the officials were a little slow on their whistle. And, you know, Lacey had a nice run. And, you know, hats off to Lacey for giving his effort. But, you know, as he's kind of struggling to break free, you know, Jarek's raising his hand like, hey, I can't, you know, I've touched you. I can't do any more. And, you know, and I get, my point is they looked really good. They were getting the reps, which is, I think, sort of a genius thing that Saban did is, you know, don't hit, don't tackle, touchdown, but go in there and get the reps. And, you know, instead of riding an exercise bike watching, go in there and get the reps. But we're going to do that in a way that protects your health and protects your safety. That's pretty clever. And I'm real pleased with that. And our secondary is going to be strong.
Well, if Daquan Menzie can continue to progress like we have been told he has progressed in the spring, and he can really be that one of those top three cornerbacks, it's kind of like in their 09 run when Marquise Johnson played a huge role as that third cornerback. And what allowed that team to be successful 2 years ago is they had three cornerbacks that could lock down the SEC opponent's top three receivers.
Yeah, and we have that plus this year, which is surprising to say that I think the secondary is going to be better than it was then. But I think that from an overall depth and an overall talent standpoint, I mean, you can only play as many players as you can get out on the field. But in terms of depth and rotation and staying fresh, yeah, this is going to be this in that respect. This is going to be a better secondary. What else did you see?
You know, I guess the only other thing I would have that I put down in our notes is Trent Richardson's a beast. He is by far the star of the offensive side of the ball. Now that two potential first rounders on the offensive side of the ball has left early, it is his mantle and he is taking it. He stood out to me on offense by far. Lacey had some good plays, don't get me wrong. But Trent's a very – I mean, I said a year ago that I felt like Trent was going to be a better player at Alabama when he was all said and done than Mark Ingram was when he left Alabama. Trent Richardson is going to be a very special guy this year.
Yeah, I agree. He is the separation between, you know, between Mark and Trent.
That's a better way to say it. There's way more separation now than there was before.
Yeah, and we've had the conversation before. You know, Mark or Trent, who's better? And you know, I'm not going to do that again. But you know, we're talking thin slices there. When we talk about, and I'm not mad at Eddie Lacy and D Hart and some of the other guys because they're going to contribute and they're going to contribute well, but the separation between Trent, he's just on another level. I mean, he is a little Superman out there, and I look forward to him really stepping up and saying, you know, this is my team, because you know he is the lead dog. On the offensive side of the ball. So I think that's exciting, and I think that he's going to certainly contribute to the leadership. And some of the other guys, you know, Courtney and Upshaw and some of the defensive backs, Barron, I think they're going to provide that same leadership on defense. So I think the leadership was a question we had going into last season. I feel comfortable today that we're going to have that issue plugged. Offensive line is where I'm at. So... Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll tide.
All right. Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right, and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
There's some place to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled, and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown!
13 national championships.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can make us play against and make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
I didn't say anything that funny until I can't watch you laugh.
Just cut the part out where I
I'm going to have to do just that because that's...
Because you're going to have to splice it. You're going to have to splice
it. I have
to
now, so I'm just going to rip all that shit out of there.
Dude, you can, when you button it down, you can just kind of...
I will. I have to clean this up.
Closing part. Stop now.